Welcome to KMXT's Talk of the Rock, our local community affairs program, where we explore issues and organizations related to our community. Talk of the Rock is hosted by members of the KMXT news team.
Welcome to Talk of the Rock. I'm Rhonda McBride, your host, for a postmortem on Friday's rocket launch at the Kodiak Pacific Spaceport. And joining us today, we have Mark Lester, who's president and CEO of the Alaska Aerospace Corporation, and Steve Wachowski, who has just joined Aerospace Corporation. And, you know, it's not every day that you see a rocket launch and then see it fall to the ground and explode. And so we have invited the both of you to give us perspective on this. And I do want to point out that we did ask Astra if they wanted to join us in the conversation. They said not today, but perhaps at some point in the future, and we certainly hope that can happen. Now, Steve, I want to just ask you a little bit about your background, because I think most people associate you with politics. You were at one time a spokesman for Senator Ted Stevens. You've campaigned for Senator Lisa Murkowski. You were also with the Interior Department. You've worn a lot of hats. So what makes you come to Alaska Aerospace Corporation?
Thanks, and good afternoon, Rhonda, to you and everyone in Kodiak Island. It's a pleasure to be invited to come on. Just real quick on my background, I'm also an officer in the Air Force Reserve, where I flew drones both here and overseas, and helped interpret that data on what they call tactical level ISR. And then the Air Force sent me to graduate school, where I did my graduate school research on remote sensing in the Arctic using aerospace techniques from satellites and drones and aircraft. And so I've been doing that for 15 years. I've got about 4.5 years of active duty under my belt. And my current job in the reserve is a reservist serving at the 611th Air Operations Center here at JBAR. We do all the NORAD, Northern Command, early warning. And so, drones and aerospace has been my passion and my education background. And so this really was a dream job fit for me when the Chief of Staff position came open. And I'm glad to serve Mark and his team. I also have a little bit of experience in the commercial sector, doing drone operations, worked with the university and worked up on the slope doing aerial survey work, both with unmanned and manned methods. Well, so that's my background, and I'm happy to be part of the team. This is my, I now have a week under my belt on the job, and I got to see a launch, and I'm just looking forward to coming to Kodiak a bunch rather than going to D.C.
Well, your first week was definitely eventful, and we'll get to that. But, Mark, let's hear a little bit about what your passion is for this. How did you get interested in becoming head of Alaska Aerospace Corporation? I mean, it's not a job that's out there widely, is it, to run something like this?
Yeah, it's been exciting. Thank you for having us on. And I'm glad to be able to talk to you and everyone at Kodiak about what we're doing, especially what happened last week. But look, this is my dream job. I've said before, I continue to convey that. My background is predominantly in space, engineer, was in the Air Force, got out as a mid-career captain and joined private industry, but largely focused still on the space industry, did a little bit of aviation, and when I saw this opportunity come up, I knew I had to apply. And I never thought about living in Alaska. I grew up on the East Coast, spent most of my adult life in the Air Force and industry in Colorado. But had tracked the Kodiak Launch Complex for a long time when I was in the service and in the industry, and have an opportunity to lead a spaceport in the early era of commercial spaceflight is exciting. We are defining what spaceports look like. And I often use the analogy that spaceports are a lot like airports, because we're all very familiar with what airports are today, but not even, you call it 100 years ago, really, airports didn't exist. They're grass strips, early airplanes, and back 100 years ago, people before us came and defined what does that look like? How do you create a safe and organized operation so that you can safely launch and recover airplanes. And that's what we're doing at the spaceport. Our runways are launch pads. Our control center is what we think about as the tower operations. And then all of the personnel that provide security, emergency services, maintain the infrastructure, that's what we have Rob Green and his team down at the spaceport doing. And so there is a lot of parallels, and we try to leverage a lot of experience from airports. No reason to reinvent the wheel so that we can create that safe environment, organized environment, to have multiple users there. And it's exciting to be engaged in making it happen. You know, what happened last week is a success in that we got flight data. We were able to launch safely a orbital class rocket. That is done very rarely. And to be right in front of that and have Alaska be part of that is good for Kodiak, it's good for Alaska, it's good for the nation, and it'll be good for future generations.
Well, let me stop you there because, you know, there is so much that is kind of counterintuitive about this. You know, for example, the idea that Alaska would be a good place to launch rockets because we have seen them launched in Florida and California. So that's kind of counterintuitive. But, you know, and so I think that there are so many things that are counterintuitive about the rocket ship industry that it's easy for there to be almost like a disconnect between a community where that's happening and the industry. And the notion that I found really hard to absorb, especially after seeing video of that rocket explode, is that it was termed a success by Astra, the company that built it, that they even felt that outcome was successful in some way and valuable to them.
I think not only did they view it as success, it was a success for the spaceport, and others in industry also noted it as being a step forward. We all wanted that rocket to go into orbit, and Astra's talked about how they, you know, wanted to go further. But what is successful about it is the whole discovery process of learning. You can only do so much on a computer. You can only do so much running equations. You got to get out and do it. And that's what we're doing here. We're launching. I wish there was a more graceful way to end a flight that has an anomaly that doesn't go quite as planned than to have a big explosion. But that is why we're prepared the way we are with our emergency procedures to address those. And why Alaska and why Kodiak in particular, to get into orbit is a great location because we fly south over the empty Pacific Ocean, and you can put satellites that circle the Earth around the North to South Pole. That gives you access to the entire Earth to take pictures, to monitor ice, to do other science and environmental studies, but also take pictures of the Earth. Communications for us here in Alaska will be done largely through polar orbiting satellites, so that gives us a lot of access. Being away from highly populated areas provides us just natural safety ability that we can build upon, and that's we work very hard in the planning process with the rocket companies, be it either a government or a commercial customer, to plan how we're going to keep the airways, the waterways, and the land free of the public right before a launch. And then we put that into place when we're doing it. So this whole process of learning is key to getting better. The Astra will learn from this and then move forward and bring a rocket next time. They'll outperform this rocket.
So let me stop you. Let me stop you there, Mark, because I do want to backtrack here on some of the things that you said. It is very counterintuitive that an explosion is something that you could always have to expect might happen because of the nature of the rocket industry. So I think people, you know, we've had issues before where things have gone wrong at the launch pad, but I think because there were those videos that went viral, there were a couple of them out there, that people see this and they go, oh, is this really something we want to have on our island? And I know one of the things that was said right after this is that it was a good thing it was a big explosion, big fiery explosion, because it meant that all the rocket fuel was consumed, so it didn't taint the soil. So maybe you could explain, I mean, are we to expect in the future that an explosion could be an acceptable outcome in some of these tests?
I think what's important to take away, Rhonda, is we always have to be prepared for it. And we always need to ensure that we're being very diligent to protect the public and our workforce from an explosion, from something not working the way we expected it to. None of us want that outcome, but that's what we have to be prepared for. That's what every launch site around the world prepares for. And I think what's a little bit unique with Narrow Cape in our spaceport is that, unlike any other spaceport, it is open to the public on any other day that we're not doing a hazardous operation for launch. So people are very accustomed to hiking through there, camping, hunting. I've hiked there with my boys and watched the whales. It is a beautiful island, it's a beautiful part of the island. And so we're very accustomed to be sharing that. And I think that's great that we can share that. And then when it comes to a launch day, we clear everyone out starting hours before that and for the hours, a few hours around the launch, and then we keep it safe. Now, on the environmental side, having a low impact on the environment and being very mindful about doing launch with an environment is important to us. And so every time we have something like this occur, we're fully mitigating the impact
Let's stop here for a second, because I do have some questions I think that the community is asking and wanting to know more about. I mean, what was the damage caused by the crash? I mean, did we have a big crater? How wide of an area was affected?
We had no injuries from the event, and no damage to our facilities. The spaceport is fully operational. For those who saw it, in fact, you know, them taking videos of it is, you know, it's just fine. And this launch, some launches we don't have open to the public at the top of the spaceport, but we had people there. We knew they're there, so they saw that, and that's fine. The rocket fell after we shut down the engines, basically between the Coast Guard, decommissioned Coast Guard land station, and the bluffs in that area of the spaceport. It's all just kind of open tundra and some trees. The rocket, once again, is only 40 feet long if it's in a shipping container, so it's pretty small. I think as you saw in the videos, it kind of came down in two parts, roughly the first stage and then the second stage. You saw two points where it came down. Everything was picked up really the next day and the day after this weekend. The crew's been working hard. We've cordoned off the areas because there may be some residual fuel. We're going to have the soil tested, and if there is some fuel contamination there, we'll do what we've done every other time and make sure that is dug up and taken away. And we've been very mindful about leaving no trace behind when this happens. I want to say there's really big craters. So the spaceport is open. Narrow Cape is open. The hiking trails are open. The road down to Fossil Beach is open. So I'm sure people have already been down there. You'll see some ropes cording off the areas that we want to make sure we're being mindful about as we move forward. I would say, you know, the areas are roughly the size of like a rocket ball court, Steve, and maybe a basketball type of size court, fairly small. Localized dirt got kicked up, some trees got broken, but other than a little bit of groundwork that was done on behalf of the rocket, everything is fine.
So you're saying there's no big crater, it's just kind of charred earth about the size of a racquetball court, and you will test the soil and remediate it. Is it possible that we could see a picture of this? I think people's imaginations about what might have happened given the size of the explosion might be worse than what actually is. Do you think Alaska Aerospace could provide us with a photograph so we could show people what the area looks like?
Yeah, I think I know we typically do town halls, so certainly I think probably our next town hall we'll have some pictures of what happened. We've been very mindful about not congregating everyone together with COVID on air, but you know, nothing to hide, right? It's all there in the open. So if that would help people understand what this looks like, especially after the fact, I think we can sort out how we do that.
So this is state land, and I guess an agreement is in place with the state that should something like this happen, because this land sort of doubles as recreational land as well. As you pointed out, when you don't have a launch in progress, and I imagine that that's pretty unique, that you have this dual use of the spaceport campus, so to speak.
Correct. Yeah, our agreement with the Department of Natural Resources, DNR, is an interagency land management agreement, ILMA, that allows us to use the Narrow Cape, about 3,700 acres, for aerospace development, and it's predominantly been focused on spaceports. So there's always notifications we give to DNR on when we're closing the area and how and major activities. DEC, the environmental side, obviously we're notifying them when we have something like this occur. So there's coordination, yes, as a state agency with other state agencies, to let them know what's going on there.
Well, I hope that you will send us a photograph when you can so we can share it with our KMXT listeners on our website. Because I think people, if they see a photograph, they may feel reassured. I would hope so anyway. And it would be nice to see a before and after at some point. When I'm sure that you're going to have to remediate the area and probably plant new grasses or whatever was there. So I hope that that can happen at some point in the near future.
Yeah, maybe the best way is love to have you out. And KMXT and out to the site and bring you out there and show you around and you kind of put that all in perspective as well, put it in context of,
well, I think, of it. I think context is really important here. And I just want to quote Elon Musk, the founder of SpaceX, because immediately after that crash happened, he posted on Astra's Twitter page sort of this message of encouragement. When Astra announced that the launch had not made it to its past its first stage. And he wrote, "Sorry to hear that. I'm sure you'll figure it out, though. Took us 4 launches to reach orbit. Rockets are hard." That was an interesting comment. Rockets are hard. How do you interpret
They're
that?
They're definitely hard. I mean, we say, rocket science is kind of used as a phrase that something is hard, right? And rocket science is hard. To put it in context, look, Elon Musk has been there, right? He went through this process in the early 2000s and had a launch vehicle about this size. And once he proved that out after 4 launches, then he started making it bigger. And now we all see SpaceX, for the company that we all love, as being very successful in launching big rockets and taking people, first time having Americans launch off of U.S. soil in a couple decades to the station. It's tremendous. It's exciting. And he gets it. He gets that this is tough. To put it in context, only SpaceX and Rocket Lab USA have been the only 2 private companies to have orbital class launch vehicles. Some of the other launch vehicles we're used to are government funded and government developed. And Rocket Lab is a company very similar to Astra, about the same size rocket. Alaska Aerospace has had the privilege of working closely with them. They launched down in New Zealand. And in fact, Alaska's antenna system, that same safety system, we have a couple of them, but one of those safety systems to command the engines to turn off is what we brought down to New Zealand to work with Rocket Lab. And in working with them and tracking their rockets and ensuring they were safe as well, so that experience, then we were able to bring back with our crew and our equipment and use here with Astra. So there are very few companies that are doing that. That's why I think you see excitement from Elon Musk. I know Buzz Aldrin, second man to walk on the moon, also tweeted about this and encouragement. Because this is very rare so far, and why
I don't,
we have
I don't understand. I don't understand because it like what went about 11,000 feet, you know, and you think, well, that's no big deal. So I mean, it's counterintuitive. You just see it go up a little bit and then crash, and you say to yourself, so why is this a milestone? Can you put that in perspective for us?
I think why it's a milestone is to have a machine, a complex machine. Perform for any amount of time, and to have this launch, and the altitude is may not be impressive to some, but for those of us in the rocket industry, space industry, we understand that a lot of technology has to come together for it to work. A lot of all the ground systems have to work. A million little pieces have to work together to have that rocket do what it did. And then to get the information, the data from that, and learn to say, okay, this is what I need to change on there, and you can change it and then keep on moving forward. Look, the Wright Brothers flight, the first Wright Brothers flight was, what, 130 feet or something like that? I don't think it was even the length of a football field. Tremendous, right? I mean, what a great milestone that we celebrate back in 1903 at Kitty Hawk, North Carolina. For all of us who love aviation, we owe a lot to that one short flight of a couple hundred feet. That is a similar thing, not to over-dramatize it, but a similar thing what we saw on Friday.
So what will we owe to this short flight someday, potentially, if Astra can keep moving forward? I mean, what is the vision that we'll look back and say, that little short flight led to this?
So the vision, and I'll talk about it from a spaceport perspective, not just one company, but we have now multiple companies who look at Alaska and Kodiak as a place that they want to do launches from and orbital launches from, is having access to space, increasing the access to space to more users. Really, space has been the domain of governments, been the domain of militaries, it's been the domain of big commercial companies like communications companies, but largely dominated by the government. And now we're starting to see that open up where university experiments can be launched. The whole STEM industry and inspiring youth can then launch a small satellite, a cube satellite that is about the size of a toaster oven into space and providing services much more broadly. All of us enjoy GPS navigation from our phones even, and getting from one location to the next and not getting lost, that's coming from satellites. So the ability to open up more services, more communications, more science to people is really what's exciting. What we want as a spaceport is to have companies like Astra and others regularly launch from Kodiak and have a pace where we're creating an economic hub in Kodiak and in Alaska that creates jobs, that creates high-tech jobs that provide our children, our grandchildren, new options of career paths that weren't available to them before here in Alaska.
So let's talk a little bit about what other possible uses there might be for that spaceport. You know, I know Steve Wachowski mentioned that, you know, his background in drones, and we have heard that St. Paul Island is going to be a test site for a drone manufacturer that wants to develop drones to deliver air cargo. So what are the potential applications of that spaceport? Or is it just sort of restricted to rockets only?
Well, that's a great question, Rhonda. And that's part of the reason that we want to expand. The corporation is chartered for the good of the state and to bring aerospace industry, all aerospace industry to the state. And so, having that range with the safety systems and the radars and the radios and the cameras in place affords an area where you could do innovative testing in a safe zone, if you will. And you know, we've still got a, I think the bread and butter is going to be getting some rockets launched and continuing safe operations. But that's an area where, again, I think we could expand out to. And you know, our intent is not to necessarily make the corporation a lot of money, but to spur the next generation of Alaska space entrepreneurship and inspire young Alaskans to get involved in STEM and to create a pipeline for the university to train aerospace engineers, electrical engineers, and then have them employed in Alaska. And, you know, we wanted to bring up one example of a success story of the corporation, and I'll let Mark talk to that and Ben Kelly.
Yeah, Ben Kelly, who has a company called The Launch Company, which is focused on this new space, small space industry. He's an alumni of SpaceX, graduate of the University of Fairbanks, University of Alaska Fairbanks, and a great entrepreneur. Those are the types of people we want to help build their businesses and see them be successful. And Ben and his team are involved in some of the infrastructure development that we do down at the spaceport, and creating those opportunities don't exist unless we have places where they can do that. As Steve was mentioning, you know, our charter is broader than just Kodiak. That's been a main focus of our efforts. But as we learn from there, now we're taking it to other places. We're looking at Poker Flat, which has been a rocket range for a long time supporting NASA, but helping the university build that out for more commercial uses. Just recently,
can I stop you there for just a second, Mark? What about the campus here? Do you see potential for, you know, for example, in Kenai Peninsula, you have a lot of oil industry support training where people can learn how to work a rig and get direct jobs. So how about with this? Do you foresee some new programs at the Kodiak campus?
Definitely. We're working with the University of Alaska on a new professional certificate around spaceport operations and management. That'll be an online program that we're hoping to roll out here. It's under development, so you know, I'd love to roll it out tomorrow, but it's going to take us a few months, maybe even half a year to get it moving. But I see that very important to allow people in Kodiak and within the state to understand how rocket operations work. How do you work a spaceport, and provide them some of the academic background, and then tie that to then practical experience out of the spaceport and engaging. We have interns that come out to the spaceport every summer. I want to expand those type of opportunities for Alaskans to understand what it takes to do this business.
Okay, and just in wrapping things up here, because we're about out of time, and you know, just in case people just joined us, I think the issue that people are most concerned about in this community is the status of the crash site. So can you recap what kind of condition it's in and what's being done for those who may have just joined?
Yeah, so as a recap, the rocket landed on the spaceport property there at Narrow Cape, roughly between the old Loran station and the bluffs. All the pieces have been picked up. The team worked over the weekend to clean up the area. We have a couple areas cordoned off, roughly the size of racquetball courts, basketball court size. Not huge, but yeah, I don't want to trivialize it either. And we've got those cordoned off for some soil testing. A lot of the fuel was burned off in the explosion that everyone saw, but it's a potential that we see some residual fuel there. We want to be very mindful, so we're going through that process of testing it. And if we find anything, we'll take care of it and fully remediate the area. So
I want to thank
Narrow Cape is open.
Okay, well, that's good news to people. I just I didn't mean to cut you off there, but we are out of time, and I want to thank Mark Lester, who is CEO of the Alaska Aerospace Corporation, and Steve Wachowski, who is, I guess, a chief of staff there now. So we want to thank both of you for joining us for this edition of Talk of the Rock. Thanks so much. It's been foremost on people's mind, and I think it's been good to have this conversation. So thanks for joining us.
Great. Thank you.
Thank you, Rhonda.
Thanks.
This has been KMXT's Talk of the Rock, our local community affairs program. Tune in next Tuesday at 12:30 to hear more about local issues and organizations.